see Zendaya like you've never seen her before.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, where Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court.
For more than a decade, she has had former best friends Patrick and Art, played by Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist, under her spell.
It's Tashi's game and Tashi's rules.
See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
I also personally just would prefer to end up with Peter. Yeah. And this is about true. My preference.
Yeah.
He is like very attractive, but I think part of what makes him so attractive.
Oh, is he?
Yes. Is that we.
Welcome to Here to Make Friends, a HuffPost podcast about the Bachelor franchise, where we lovingly snark on The Bachelor and Bachelor adjacent shows.
Whether you love The Bachelor or love to hate it, we're here to break down every single delicious moment with you.
I'm Emma Gray.
And I'm Claire Fallon. So, Emma, I have a question for you. Which Viking game did you find the most, like, sexy?
I'd say any Viking game that included Peter's face. That's my answer.
That is a really specific answer, but I like it. I would say it's the one where she has to hold onto a tapered stick that is greased and a guy has to yank it out of her hand. I felt like that was a little on the nose.
Like a lubed up a situation. Viking situation. It's very authentic.
Penis-shaped object.
It's very authentic.
It's true. Yeah. Like if you can get the woman's hand off of it, then you can marry her.
Win her.
Actually, that seems like the reverse. Anyway, we have a lot of Viking games to discuss, one-legged jousting, etc. And we are joined today to talk about that and everything else that happened last night by actress Erin Dark, who you may have seen in Amazon's excellent series Good Girls Revolt. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Erin is so dedicated that she watched this episode last night at 11 p.m. So, like, we thank you for your service.
It's really a pleasure.
I would never guess. You still seem so, like, full of energy and ready to talk about The Bachelorette when I'm up until 1. It doesn't go like that.
It's a combination of coffee and just true passion about the subject matter.
So we have to start with the end of another cliffhanger.
Can we just...
Once again, involving Lee and Kenny.
I hope this is it. I hope this is the end of the cliffhangers. Like, I need us to get back to form. And I felt that this episode might have gotten us there.
I mean, they made it through a whole rose ceremony at the end.
I know. It was a blessing. It was a blessing.
I didn't think that she could do it, but she really pulled it out. But we start in the middle of this Kenny and Lee beef on the two-on-one. Kenny has just heard from Rachel that Lee called him violent and said that he pulled him out of a van, which is just such a ridiculous accusation that every time it's verbalized, I'm just like, I can't take this seriously. And she says, you know, I don't know what to believe. Kenny said he was just as surprised as I was to hear that. I don't have clarity still. Meanwhile, Kenny is approaching Lee to sort of have it out. He's like... hooting.
I think Kenny's just like, you have sent me over the edge. Like, I'm done.
No, he definitely lost his mind for a minute, but also in like an amazingly entertaining way.
So good.
His stream of profanities was like.
He's so entertaining. He's hilarious. This episode, like, I just love Kenny so much.
I do too. R.I.P. Kenny.
I know. And he pulls out the snake metaphor again. He's like, oh, snakey, don't you ever feel no shame? I was like, I don't know if I like the snakey.
He calls him a piece of shit, son of a bitch. Like, fantastic.
Did they bleep out when he said, I am going to drag my dick over your grave? Was that the word they bleeped out?
I don't know.
There was definitely a moment where he said, I'm going to drag bleep over your grave.
Or it really could have been that.
Whatever it was, yeah. It was great.
That was amazing. And Rachel last night tweeted, like, something about how, you know, she doesn't always see things or do things when people want her to. But she says, I keep the grass cut low so I can see the snakes.
Yeah, and then she said, hashtag bye, Lee.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we finally get rid of Lee. I'm never been so relieved to get to move on to other things.
Yeah. I really enjoyed her goodbye to him, actually. She's like, Lee, after hearing what I heard today, I don't trust you. Yeah.
She's so fantastic and direct. And when she sends people home, she tells them why, and she moves on. She is done. She's like, I don't trust you. Goodbye. And then she tells Kenny, like, I still have questions, so let's spend more time together. And then in the one error Kenny made last night, instead of just going off in the helicopter with Rachel, he decides he needs to go back and tell Lee off one more time. And we just see Rachel sitting there talking to a producer like, what do you need to say? I told him goodbye.
And then that's the thing. What he was saying was actually, like, he actually wasn't – he didn't go back and, like, it wasn't profanities that time. He was just like, I hope you become a better person. Yeah.
I understood why he needed to do it. And I think that his explanation to Rachel later in the evening made a lot of sense. He's like, I had – this guy treated me terribly. I was super frustrated with him. And I needed to go back and, like – let that out so that it wasn't on my chest later on. I wasn't bottling it up. And I appreciate – I thought that was a really excellent explanation, but it was also, like, just a tactical error because Rachel was sitting there.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think, like, sometimes – I also think as, like, women, sometimes we're not quite capable of understanding the decisions testosterone causes you to make.
I don't know. I would totally have done what Kenny did. I would be like, sorry, you wait here. I'm going to go have it the fuck out. Like, but I'm also very verbal, and things just, like, come out of me sometimes. So I understood.
But, yeah, I was glad that we got to say goodbye to Lee on the note of, like, Kenny telling him, there's a decent Lee inside there. Like, goodbye, sir. Yeah.
I thought that was pretty revealing, too, that he was like, this isn't my chance to go back and be like, LOL, I win. It was his chance to be like, I've been too, like, caught up in the drama to say anything to you other than, like, fuck you, you're a snake. But now is my chance to come back and be like, here's what I really think, and
please improve yourself.
Yeah. Go forth and self-improve.
The men tell all is going to be wild.
What, like, Robert Mills, I think, tweeted something about this scene where he was like, get your popcorn ready for the men tell all. And I was like, ew, I don't want to watch.
I'm more just intrigued to, like, hear what Rachel has to say, having now seen all the things that were happening in the background with Lee.
I'm not interested in seeing them do another, like, back to settle scores, like, gross framing of the situation. I am interested to see a few months out from this, all of the other men and Rachel having seen the full context of Lee, seen his tweets, seen what this show has done. Like, I'm actually curious to see how they react to it. Yeah. I mean, I stand by our argument that the entire contrivedness of the whole thing and dragging it out four episodes is gross.
Yeah.
But it'll certainly be an eye-opening evening.
It really upset me how they because they came back in the middle of this scene multiple times, like last episode and this episode between Kenny and Lee, and they frame it as like, they're back, they're bringing their egos to the wilderness.
And you're like, no, that's not
really
what happened.
Yeah. And you turn it into this like Battle of the Titans instead of what it really is, which is a much less conventional and more disgusting situation.
I also have to say that I was just really relieved because all of the, like, promos had really made it seem like it was going to end in a fist fight, and that was how Kenny ended up bleeding. And I was just, like, I was actually, like, so relieved when that scene ended, and I was like, oh, Kenny's just going to, like, run into a door later or something.
Yeah. I feel like they almost always do that. Every time they show someone hurt, it's almost never a dramatic situation.
I think they have these violent games so that they will get shots of them bleeding. Seriously.
To use in the promos.
Yeah. They're like, someone will get hurt, but we won't have actually filmed them having a violent altercation. Win-win.
So farewell to the smug bigot. And now we get to move on to Kenny having some time with Rachel. Again, they have that really, like, really honest exchange, you know, final kind of exchange about his reaction to Lee, and I thought it was great. And then Kenny's just he's I don't know, he's just really fantastic. He says he's, like, really put things on hold because he's a romantic and he wants to be in love and he wants to find a partner and someone that his daughter can look up to. And I like that we finally get to see Rachel be like, yeah, you're a trustworthy person. I see that you're here for me. I don't know if this is going to work out, but, like, I want to give you the rose in good faith to kind of move forward away from this whole situation.
I think she's just trying to figure out if he's not got, like, a dark side, but if he is short-tempered, because she's seen so much of him blowing up over the past couple of weeks, and she's, like, really just, like, straight up tell me, do you have a short fuse? Are you going to be volatile? And he's like, no. And, like, in a relationship, I would be very loving. And she's like, love really heightens emotions more. So that doesn't make sense. And he was like, not for me. Like, I'm very, like, there's love in everything I do in a relationship.
I mean, after watching him cry on the phone with his daughter, what, like, three times in that episode?
I loved
night?
It. Like, yeah. He's clearly such a loving father.
Such a loving.
And also someone who's obviously spent time thinking about himself and thinking about the way he reacts to things, because every time he spoke about, you know, the way he handles emotion or relationships, it was just very thoughtful and self-aware. And you're like, oh, this is a person who has, like, had a lot of self-reflection in his life. And that's a really positive quality in a person. Yeah. And I think we see that portrayed, at least on television, a lot less with men. So I found that whole thing to be really, really nice. And then just to see him interact with his daughter was very sweet. And his daughter clearly is a really great kid.
She's awesome.
She's like, Dad, if you like her, you like her. You should go for it.
So he goes and FaceTimes with her after Rachel gives him the rose. And she's like, I do really like you. That's why I was so direct. And I want to continue this. And then he goes and FaceTimes his daughter, and she has tiger, like, cat face paint on,
so
little
cute
ears. And he's crying because he misses her. And she's like, no, it's going to be okay. You deserve to be happy. And that's when they show this shot that they kept showing in promos of him, like, walking down the hallway in the hotel with his, like, hands behind his head, like, looking really defeated. And they were playing it like maybe he was going to be sent home. But it was really just that he was like, oh, I love my daughter.
It was just like the sweetest, like, father-daughter moment.
Every shot of Kenny where he looks, like, defeated or – like, it's all – that they were – it was all misdirect in every promo. None of it was him being, like, overly angry. It was mostly just him being really moved by conversations with his daughter.
Like, the world's sweetest dad.
Or, like, playing up being a Viking. So, we never trust the promos is the continued lesson here.
Yeah, I think I learned that more than ever, actually, maybe with last night's episode, though. Like, that was one where I was like, wow, you guys did an amazing job of editing that promo. Like, I was, like,
imagine them
stealing
watching
myself
the footage
for it.
And being like, oh, yeah, we're going to make a beautiful, beautiful work of art.
Yeah,
this,
I mean, those,
moment.
Like, promo editors, that is a craft in and of itself.
It really is. And so then we are coming up to the first rose ceremony of the episode. I was just like, wait, what? Where are we? What is happening? They're having the rose ceremony at a place I want to call out called Losby God's Manor, which is an amazing name. And she's wearing a beautiful, like, gold dress.
Oh, it's like a gold, like, wrap dress.
The styling choices have been on point. I think it's Corey Fettman is the stylist. Just want to give him a shout out because it's been on point.
Are we, like, done with cocktail parties now?
I guess.
I think
cocktail parties just not happen anymore?
I wonder if some of them did happen, but they just were like, these aren't important to the storyline. Yeah. And because they didn't mention that they were skipping the cocktail party in the second
At
rose ceremony
point,
we saw.
At a certain point, they do stop, but
I feel like it's usually once they aren't living together, after hometowns.
But she is sort of like, I know what I'm going to do going into tonight. And, you know, Josiah, we know Josiah's going home because we get a lot of Josiah being like, I'm Josiah Daniel Graham.
I'm amazing.
And I have so many layers and I'm so confident. He's like, she doesn't give me a
I'm
rose.
I'm empathetic and I'm attractive. And if she doesn't give me a rose, there's something wrong with her brain. And you're like, oh, Josiah, this is just every time they start showing someone talking a lot before a rose ceremony, like, 75% of the time, they're going home.
And they show Alex being really nervous, so obviously he stays. Dean, Eric, Peter, Alex, Adam, and Matt get roses, and Josiah and Anthony are going home. And that was a bummer.
Anthony has a really, like, kind exit. He is a really – seems like a really – good guy. I mean, the way I read that, Anthony, I think she just didn't have that much chemistry with. Like, we kind of saw their one-on-one date. Like, she was into him and liked him, but not nearly as much as some of the other men.
Yeah.
So I sort of read that as, like, she could send him home because she had gotten the chance to spend enough time with him to know that
it wasn't there.
I also, like, I relate to this, so this isn't meant in, like, a harsh way. I wonder if Rachel kind of likes being the intellectual alpha in her relationships. Like, and I'm that, not that I'm like smarter than the guys I've been with or my husband, I love you, but like, I like to feel like they let me shine. Like, if I ever feel like my like partner is like, I'm secretly more of a genius than you, I'd be like, I don't like this. Like, I identify as the smart one. And I think that she tends to go for guys as like, from what we've seen, who sort of defer to her a little more intellectually and like give her a fun vibe and like let her relax and not be like lawyer Rachel. And Anthony was very
serious
and definitely leaned more on that intellectual side. So I don't know. But they didn't seem to have much chemistry.
He's a beautiful Fulbright scholar, though, so I think he'll be okay.
I think he'll be fine. I think someone's going to snatch him up.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Josiah goes on a whole rant about how he's better Josiah than all of the other men that were kept around.
That's the thing. Josiah has, like, a super sad backstory, right?
Yeah,
and I was,
yeah,
like, rooting from him in the beginning, but he's, like, the least fun person I've ever seen. Like, he's just so serious all the time. Like, I feel like it was, like, episode 3 where I was like, you know how to smile. Like, do that more.
Well, I think it's, like, he wasn't fun really with her, but he was really funny when he's joking around with the,
like,
other guys.
The other guys, yeah.
I was like, you needed to bring that to your conversations with Rachel. Like, you're
like
jokey.
He thinks romance is serious. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I got from him, that he thinks romance is like this really serious, intense thing, and you can't joke around or have fun during it because that's not romantic.
He definitely has a romance script in his head that he plays. And I feel like because we know so much about Josiah's backstory, it's hard not to like psychologize. And like, I always feel like he is really – has succeeded a lot in life because he, like, decided to just overcompensate really hard in every area. Like, he's like, I'm going to overcome this. I'm going to be a badass at work. I'm going to be a smooth-talking romancer. I'm going to be the funniest guy in the gang. But he's not showing any vulnerability in any of those contexts.
Yeah.
He's not actually opening up because there is a lot of, I think, pain being covered up. But his send off was
terrible.
Awful.
It was terrible. He calls Alex a KGB agent. He like what did, he said
I
something
Alex
was
from
that
Gross
was
Point,
no,
Michigan.
No, it was pretty funny. But he like just goes off and basically he's like, I'm better than Alex. I'm better than Adam.
He's like,
I'm better than Matt.
You're gonna keep Matt instead of over me. That's just weird. He's like, woman, you have some poor judgment. And I was like, oh, dude. Like,
Rachel is not gonna take kindly to that because she's like, I have excellent judgment.
Yeah.
And she does. So farewell, Josiah. Lean into your like funny Game of Thrones references rather than
seriously go to a lot of therapy. Like, maybe you have been, but you can't like connect with a woman by just like running a romance monologue at her. You have to like be able to open up to her, and it seemed like he was struggling with that.
Yeah. So we leave with a little inner cut of Eric saying like, well, that's two more black guys sent home by Rachel. And then we kind of cut right to, like,
but
they're off
say,
to Denmark.
He does say, like, she's going through a lot emotionally and it seemed hard and she has to do what's right for her. So I feel like Eric is kind of trying to.
I don't think Eric.
To be understanding.
I think Eric is just always sort of processing and trying to protect himself and trying to sort of figure out Rachel's strategy. Not saying she's calculating, but he's like trying. It's a self-protective move. Like he's an anxious guy, and I really like. The more I see him, right, I actually relate to him. I think that he's sort of just overthinking everything and he's trying to find patterns rather than, like, unfortunately, sometimes liking someone and romance and the way this show works, like, there's not really quite such a clear rhyme or reason for anything.
Well, and I think, like, intentionally, like, if, you know, if there was a clear rhyme or reason, like, the producers know people would lose interest. So, like, they intentionally try and keep people... you know, a little ungrounded. And I think there are people like Eric that just have a harder time dealing with that.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's like we saw that with Vanessa last season, too. It's like the people
Actually,
who get in their own
heads.
Actually,
a lot of the winners are because I...
Well, because they care
I'm mentally
a lot,
blanking
to be
on
honest.
Who ended up with Caitlin. Is it...
Sean.
Yeah.
He was a mess.
Yeah, he was like a mess through the process. So, like, it is like sometimes those people are actually, like, weirdly the ones who are maybe more realistically emotionally invested, and that's why they can't handle it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true with Eric, but it is like a pattern.
No, I think that's definitely a pattern.
Yeah.
And yeah,
I think it's also the case that, you know, often the lead is going through a process where they might send home someone who they liked maybe more than someone who stays later, not out of a weird, like, I have to mix things up thing, but because they've invested more attention and focus on someone early on and because they were drawn to them, and then that's allowed them to decide, actually, this person isn't my husband. Whereas someone like maybe Matt or Adam, she's like, I'm saving that. I haven't explored that yet. And so I'm not ready to say one way or the other. But Anthony, I've spent time with. And
that was exactly my read on both Anthony and Josiah. It wasn't necessarily that in the long run, like, they were less compatible with her than some of the other guys who will probably go home next week. It was more the exactly like you said, like, she's spent enough time with them because she was curious.
Yeah.
To make that call. And I think Rachel's also someone that, like, once she has the realization that this isn't it, she doesn't really have the capacity to
keep pretending.
Fake it longer, which I appreciate. And so she's like, okay, this is really hard. I really like you as a person, but, like, I have completely squared with myself that you're not going to be it in any capacity at the end. So, like, it's time to send you home.
Yeah.
And then they're off to Copenhagen.
Yeah.
I thought that the dates on this episode were amazing.
I really love when they go to just a fun city and they get to hang out in the city. And that's like, what else do you do in Denmark?
It looked genuinely fun. It looked genuinely fun, running around the city. I loved this date with Eric. Eric gets the one-on-one, finally.
I'm coping to love. Yikes.
Did he read that correctly the first time is what I want to know. Like, it was like, I'm copping to love. And they were like, can you just give us that one more time?
Yeah. Like, do you know what city we're in?
I mean, that was like a really bad pun.
It was bad.
It was terrible.
They were really reaching with that one.
And then they said it like 50 times during this date.
She's like, I'm coping to love. And he's coping to love.
He's like, I'm definitely cope into love myself. Oh, just like, stop. But he's feeling really good because he's fine. Like, he really just switches on a dime. Like, he's either like a mess of insecurities or he's like, I feel amazing. This is going to be the best day.
He responds very well to affirmation. And I think he's been waiting. He's like, he knows if she likes me, eventually she's going to give me a one-on-one. And every time he doesn't get it, it's like a confirmation that she's not into him at all. So this is like, okay, now I can relax and have fun because I'm not spending all my time worrying that she has no interest in me.
Right.
And he's great. Like, Eric is fantastic on this date.
He was great.
He was just like a toddler in terms of his energy level. He was just like, I can't stop moving. Rachel, hi, Rachel, as she approaches in the boat. And then he's like, I have to dance by the side of the boat. Let's dance together. And I was like, oh my God, like he is overflowing with energy.
But like, I kind of get it. Like when you're in that place where you're like really excited about someone and then you throw in like foreign city on vacation.
And
like,
not being able to leave a hotel room for weeks on end.
Like, yeah. I think she loved it. Like that's what she didn't get from Will is that sense of like, I finally get to spend time with you. I'm so excited. He did not hide that at all. He kept just like goofily like hugging her and like smacking her on the cheek, like
he's
kiss
a great
smack.
Smile too. I was glad that we got this date because I finally understood maybe what she had been getting little hints of and why she has seemed so into him, despite the fact that up till this point, like, we've really only seen him spiraling.
Right.
Yeah.
And they were just having a great time. He was like game to do all the things they were doing. He was like delighted by every new activity. They get into one of those public hot tubs.
We have to talk about the kids.
Oh, the kids thing.
When they're just setting off on the date, they're talking about like, she's like, I love like hanging out at bars with friends and like blah, blah, blah.
Sports.
I'm just normal. And he's like, how many kids do you want? She says, 4. And he says, oh, wow. And she's like, is that a lot? And he says, no, I actually want 10. Like, what? People see like 4 is such a small number. Like, I don't even know.
She tweeted.
Yeah, that can't be the first time he's had a woman say a number under 10, right?
Sure. No. He's never dated before.
I actually think he was surprised that she said that many. And then he was sort of like, oh, yeah, no, I mean, I want like a million kids.
Yeah.
But she tweeted last night something along the lines of like, if we hadn't been on the water, I would have run away when he said 10 kids.
That's fair. I mean, that's terrifying.
Yeah, you're like, that's, do you know how long you have to be pregnant to have 10 kids?
Yeah.
She would just be pregnant all the time. That's how in the olden days women avoided having periods and bleeding out all of their iron. Just a little fun fact for everyone. They were just pregnant all the time.
What a delightful life.
I liked this date because it felt honestly like a kind of real person's date. Yeah, like it felt like two people, like, you know, it's a boat ride. They're going around a city. I was like, that is a date that I could realistically like see my boyfriend and I on. Whereas like so many of the dates.
My husband and I do it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, we always go to Copenhagen and get in public hot tubs. But it did
and
like
talk with like 60-year-old couples. We're but just like, tell us your life story.
Yeah, tell us your life story. But as compared to like rappelling down like an Olympic ski jump or whatever, I was like, this is like, I feel like I'm getting...
Yeah, you're touring around a city having... Like, that is a thing a person could do if they went to Copenhagen.
Yes.
Yeah.
The public hot tub looked fun. And they had, like, champagne.
Yeah,
it was
there was...
The other people around them, it was like... Yeah. I was like, what was the pitch they gave
to these
people? There
was another group of guys. I think it's just, like, a public hot tub area.
I know, but they obviously designed releases to be on the show. So they were like, do you want to be on this American show?
No, that guy seemed really excited about it. Like, the guy with holding a beer, like, stands up. He's completely nude.
Yeah.
And he yells, welcome to Denmark. I think they were excited to show a little bit of their nude hot tub culture to America. It was just, I loved too how she was like, do you want to just get in a hot tub here? I don't know. I'm not ready. Cut to her in like a beautiful bikini. Yeah. I was like, okay, Rachel.
I was picturing like the production assistant who's there just like carrying bathing suits.
I mean, that's probably the number one job of at least one production assistant.
It's
like,
just
have
like,
a bathing suit
ready. Have a bathing
ready.
Suit at all times.
She's probably like, but my hair looks so nice. Why do I have to get in the water again? And then they go to Tivoli, which is an amusement park.
That also looked really fun.
Yeah.
I was just into this date. They go on bumper cars. Like, I just felt like Eric was living his best life. We just kept getting shots of him, like, laughing hysterically. And then they sit and have kind of a more in-depth conversation, which I thought was nice because she kind of says, like, you know, I feel like I've gotten to know you in the sense of –
yeah,
where you're
like,
at right
now. I
know
you in the present, yeah, but I don't really know about, like, you. Which I thought was, like, that was, like, one of those moments where I was like, you're so good, girl.
I know.
And so he gives her, like, the Cliff Notes. He's like, I was always a good student. I was good at sports. I didn't do
– He said, I'm a cool square.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cute.
It's like, I never, like, got into drugs. I never got in trouble. But he says that – he didn't really get love growing up from his parents, and like he really wanted his mom to like pay attention to him like the way that Rachel was and like talk with him like that, and he just never got it, and he always felt alone, and so he doesn't know how to deal with love as an adult.
I thought that was like, again, a really like a thoughtful, self-reflective explanation, and I appreciated that he was really honest with her, like, you know, I feel something for you. I'm not going to just say it's love, because it's not – being in love is not something that's familiar to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think vulnerability is really powerful. And it also – just hearing the way that he speaks about this, like – his Instagram is a lot of, like, inspirational quotes, and it just, like, kind of made more sense to me.
No, he's definitely very – it's interesting as a contrast to Josiah, like, the way that he's dealing with a lack or a trauma in his childhood is to, like, think about it a lot and talk about it a lot and find, like, maybe some sort of new agey self-affirmation coping measures for it, as opposed to, like, ignoring it and covering it up a little bit. And – Rachel clearly really likes that he is opening up to her about it and that he's being honest. And she really takes it as very flattering. You know, she's like, he's never been able to fall in love before, but he is with me.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, Rachel, he also is just like on this show.
And yeah.
Of course he is.
I also like, I do have like the tiniest bit of a red flag when someone clearly has that many mom issues. There's just a small part of, like, me that's like, I think he's a great guy and you can go there if you want to. But, you know, you probably will have to deal with some of that.
Yeah. Yes.
I think if you're the Bachelorette, that's when you get to be really selective about stuff. Like, do I want to be with a guy who's never been in love, like, who says openly that he doesn't know how to handle that? Maybe I should go with a guy who seems a little more ready. But, like, she clearly, you know, feels something with Eric, and she ends up saying, you know, I'm excited to go on another date with him, which we don't hear a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think he's going to be around a while.
That's the thing. Yeah. If he's the right dude, you deal with that stuff, like, and you figure it out. Well, there was just a tiny part of me that was like, yeah, I mean, you know, going in, that like,
yeah,
right. That's the thing.
That's like, you might do some couples therapy. You just know that going in.
And that's okay.
Sometimes it's better to start with the couples therapy so that it's not weird when you bring it up later.
Right.
Like, we're just going to do the couples therapy now.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more from Aaron Dark and our breakdown of all the news that's happened in the last day with regards to Bachelor in Paradise. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Lately, my social battery has actually been full to bursting. I feel like I've barely been able to see anyone all winter, especially with little kids at home and constant daycare bugs. And I'm just like dying to get out there and see some people. And, you know, it's actually been kind of hard at times over the winter to feel like I'm just desperate to see friends and I don't have time to do it.
I feel like we're constantly trying to regulate, like, what's the correct amount of social energy? What kind of space do we need to carve out to actually give ourselves the space to socialize? What space do we need to carve out to give ourselves time to actually recharge? Either way, therapy can give you some self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery or store it up a little too much.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/love to see it today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/love to see it. If you have a cat, you want your cat to be healthy and happy because, of course, that makes you happy.
But since, you know, people aren't mind readers, we don't always know when our cats are unwell.
So helping us keep tabs on our cat's health is just one reason you should use Pretty Litter.
Pretty Litter's ultra-absorbent crystals trap odor instantly. No more cat bathroom smell.
Pretty Litter's super light crystal base also minimizes mess and dust.
Here's the coolest thing about Pretty Litter. It actually changes color to help monitor early signs of potential illness in your cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues.
Plus, Pretty Litter ships free right to your door in a small, lightweight bag.
Our producer, Talon, has started using Pretty Litter for his cats, and he is a huge fan already. He's found that, like, the crystals really do soak up that odor, and cleaning the litter box is easier than it's ever been because it doesn't get all like weird and clumpy inside, which I remember so well from cleaning my cat's litter box.
Pretty Litter helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keep odors down.
You and your cat are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do.
Go to prettylitter.com/LTSI and use code LTSI to save 20% on your first order.
That's prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI to save 20%.
prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI.
Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Are you one of those people who thinks they don't have time to prioritize wellness? Yeah, guilty.
Well, Claire, Allo Moves is here to change that whole mindset for you.
The app makes it so easy to keep your wellness routine on track because they have everything in one place. There's yoga, Pilates, fitness classes. There's mindfulness and self-care tips, even healthy recipes, and so much more.
It's kind of wild how far-reaching Allo Moves goes. And their classes range from 5 minutes to an hour. It really just depends on what you have time for that day.
Trying to get in a good sweat? Then you've got to try their award-winning workouts like sweat-inducing yoga flows, HIIT classes, or former Pilates workouts with or without weights.
Or you can find stress relief with things like meditations, affirmations, or face yoga.
It's so hard to prioritize wellness when you have a busy job or kids or both. And now that I have both, it's so important to me to be able to squeeze in a workout when I have that random 5 minutes to an hour in between tapings after bedtime. It makes such a big difference how flexible it is and how easy it is to get what you need from the app.
Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves.
Go to allomoves.com now and use code LTSI20 for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code LTSI20.
allomoves.com, code LTSI20. One in five Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list.
If, like us, that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel.
Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks.
Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better.
One study even found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college.
Oh man, could have saved so much time. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. I recently was in France and Portugal, and I was trying my hand at getting more comfortable with French, really brushing up a little bit, and I found Babbel so helpful. I'm not going to say that I like arrived all fluent, but I did feel much more comfortable ordering food in restaurants, asking for directions, reading signs, speaking to people when I was buying something without having to constantly be consulting a language app.
Here's a special limited time deal for listeners.
Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/LTSI.
Get 55% off at babbel.com/LTSI.
Spelled BABBEL.com/LTSI.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
Let me set the scene. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at actually unbeatable prices.
I love it.
Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach.
Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. We truly love to see it.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I love Quince, and I actually have a couple recent Quince purchases that I'm really excited about. I just ordered the Glow Boho hoops to have like kind of a chunkier version of my usual gold hoops to wear, like maybe on a date night or something. And they are beautiful. They're everything I dreamed of.
Indulge in affordable luxury.
Go to quince.com/LTSI for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/LTSI to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/LTSI.
And then we get a group date.
I've taken a Viking to you guys. And it's, this episode are the worst.
Oh, so bad. But it's Dean, Kenny, Brian, Alex, Matt, Peter, and Adam. This was also a hilarious date. I was very into this.
I just want to say, so they row over to this, like,
on a
island
Viking
or something
ship.
On a Viking ship. And then they are introduced to two Viking instructors, Tom and Morten. Tom, like, I love how they give them a little space for this. Tom introduces himself as, like, and he has a little, he pronounces his V's as W's. So
I
he's saying, like,
that.
I'm a Viking fighting instructor, knows about Viking and fighting and Viking things. And then Morten says, I'm Morten. I know exactly the same as Tom. I was like, I just want the whole show to be about them.
I know. I loved Morten a lot.
So yeah, I was very into these guys.
But can we also rewind for just one second and talk about how Brian could not row? He was at the front next to Rachel, and every time they would cut to it, Brian had like just lost his oar or was like
that would
to
be me. That would be me. I'm
it would
very
totally
bad
be
at
me.
Rowing.
It was just I think it was like funny because he was right in the front. So like every time they would show a shot of like look at all of them rowing, Brian was like picking his oar up off the floor. Like
what I didn't notice that, and that's amazing. But what I did notice is that it was like she seemed to have her A team up close to her.
Yeah,
and, like flanking her was like Brian. Ryan, Peter, and Dean were the closest to the front. I was like, yeah, we get it. You're into them.
Maybe they're just like, maybe they're up front because, like, in the race for her heart. Yeah. Because they're really good at putting themselves close to her.
Yeah, yeah.
So they all get dressed in Viking outfits and do some Viking yelling. And I love Alex was like, this whole date is about, like, dressing up and like
being physical.
Alex,
I'm great
he's
at
like,
this.
I'm perfect
loves
at this.
Being told to put on an outfit and doing a sport, any sort of sport.
Even later, like, he was wearing like bright blue pants at the rose or at the end of the group date. He's just like got that.
Well, Alex's style is amazing. Do you remember a couple of weeks ago he wore like a purple suit with black like.
Oh yeah,
stripes. So, yeah,
he likes wearing something like interesting and colorful. And he does look like a very convincing Viking.
He's also just like a total ham. And a lot of these guys are very into sort of the performance aspect of it. And they and Claire and I were discussing this earlier. But often when we see these physical challenges on past seasons, it can turn very aggro. And
that's exactly what I was going to say.
And instead, this is – they're, like, performing at masculinity in a really funny way. And I've been very struck, and I tweeted about this last night, I've been very struck by, now that, like, Lee has exited stage right, the lack of fragile masculinity that we see. Like, these guys, they're not unmasculine, but they seem really comfortable in themselves, and they're very openly affectionate with their friendships. And they also know how to, like, have fun with something like this without turning it into like a referendum on their worth as men. They can just sort of joke around about it. You even have Dean being like, I would be a great Viking, a Viking that doesn't fight very much. It was totally charming.
I love the first game is that Rachel holds like a tapered stick in her hand that's greased, and if the guy can take it from her, he can marry her. And all the like at first the guys are sort of like actually trying to do it, and then Peter's like, I'm just gonna pick her up.
That's his technique, because he did that technique during handball as well.
Yeah. Like. And then Adam picks her up and runs away. And I'm like, that actually is kind of how marriage used to work, which is a little
she
disturbing.
Is mine.
And then they play a bunch of games where they're like fighting while hopping on one leg.
And
or, like,
Dean is just like running in circles around the other guys. They're like, Dean, no, you got to get in there. And he's like,
what? You just hear someone go, you can't run away, Dean. Yeah.
So, oh, I certainly can. And they have to, like, try to shove each other out of the circle with, like, their butts. Like, it's just so great. And Dean is terrible at all of it.
But he's just laughing about it.
It's great.
I'm going to say I'm not 100% convinced that Vikings actually did any of those games.
I'm not sure how authentic
I'm not sure how historically accurate, but I enjoyed it immensely.
Me too. And then we get to the violence.
The violence.
Which is just like,
I was like, no.
A complete accident, of course. Like, yeah. Adam and Kenny are just sort of shoving at each other with their shields in a face-off. And both end up accidentally hitting the other one.
In like an identical
spot. In an identical spot with the side of the shield.
And it's a really bloody place to get gashed.
And they're both just like,
the temple eye area.
Oh no, we got hurt. Like, let's just put a Band-Aid on it and call it a day. Yeah. It was not dramatic at all.
At all.
And Kenny, I guess, won the Viking games, which yes. is...
His outfit was fantastic.
It's real redemption after the wrestling.
Yeah.
So he gets like a trophy that's like just a cup with... horns on it.
Does he get to take that home with him?
The only thing we know of.
You know, I hope
definitely
so.
I hope so. I want him to like go home and be able to give that to his daughter.
Yeah.
They're probably like,
she may
guys,
not run Rachel, but I got this great trophy.
You have to give us back all the costumes. And Alex is like,
do you think
no.
Josiah like took that cup, that big cup he wanted the spelling bee as like a carry-on item?
Probably.
Yeah, just like on their flight to Oslo, like, nope, gotta have my cup.
Be like, excuse me, I'll take a sparkling water and I will take it in this cup. Thank you. So they get to the evening portion of the date and Rachel toasts to them, pillaging her feelings and raiding her heart. Which was a little intense. And Brian grabs her first. I like can't deal with Brian.
I know. I'm really trying to keep an open mind about Brian because she's so into him, and I just always want to support Rachel.
Yeah.
But they keep having these conversations where they're not really saying anything. He's just, like, at one point, he's like, do you even realize how it's going to be? And she's like, no.
She's like, she's like, no. Like, why would I?
She's like, do you?
And he's like, yeah, it's going to be magical.
And she's like, well, you're an optimist and maybe I'm more of a pessimist. And he's like, why? Just think about the good stuff. And she's like, well, like, we live in different cities. And I thought it was interesting that she brought that up. She and Peter have already talked about it a lot. And Brian is sort of just like, love, man, when you're ready. And I'm like, no, tell her you'll move. Like, that's what this conversation is.
That's the thing. I've never been a giant Brian fan. He's the last remaining person I have on my fantasy team, my bachelorette fantasy team. So like my boyfriend and I like have to root for him, but I don't.
But it's so bitter.
He's just like so far beyond like what my type as a human being is.
Yes.
Like, I hate romantic platitudes and that seems to be the only thing he's like capable of saying.
Right. Like, she was like, let's talk about it another way. And he's like,
and he's
baby,
like a
it's you and
way.
Me. And we're going to feel those exploding sparkles. And it's like, and
the
no,
only thing we really get from him is that he does talk a little bit about his family. And he says his family's really, really open.
Well, it actually was really heartbreaking how that started because they're, like, canoodling. And she sort of is, like, whispering. She's like, do you think your family will accept me?
Yeah.
Oh, is that what she said?
That's what she
I
said.
Missed that.
And,
wow.
Yeah. So, and he says, yeah. He's like, they're very open people, and if I, you know, love someone, then they'll totally accept them.
But I just want him to, like, talk about, like, a, like, negative factor of, like, his personality or some. I don't know. It's just like,
something more substantive. And maybe, yeah. You know, they just aren't showing those things. Like, these conversations yeah. often last much longer than we see. But and I'm hoping, like, as we kind of whittle it down, we're going to see more of that because I just feel like at she could end up with this guy at the end yeah. of it. And I hate when they do that without, like, properly showing us why the lead.
Yeah, like,
that
why, yeah.
I'm like, what are you going to, like, I used to get really annoyed at my husband when we first started dating. Like, he went through a phase of, like, infatuation where, like, he would just turn every conversation into, like, oh, my God, you're so smart. And I just love your little face. And I was like, cool. But, like, we were talking about something. And, like, it's really – I can't, like, make a conversation out of how you think I'm cute. So, like, we need to be able to still these conversations or, like, we're not going to have a relationship. Like, that's not a relationship. And that's all that Brian seems to be giving her right now. And I'm like, yeah. I cringe at that.
Something else that I noticed about them and one reason I think that – she part of why she might be so into him is that, like, being in the role of lead is a really sort of isolating and insecure position often, like, which we often don't think about. But at the end of the day, like, you're trying to make the best decision. You don't quite know who's really going to be serious about you in the real world. And Brian is so reassuring to her and so open about how into her he is. And I think that that is probably, like, very helpful to her.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's the thing is, like, I get being – I mean, I don't personally, but I get how a person could be, like, really into Brian.
Let's be real. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand. I have not understood it, like, since the first episode. Like, I was watching, like, I watched the first episode with, like my boyfriend and, like, two male friends. And, like, the first conversation Brian had with her, like, both of the dudes in the room were like, that guy's too smooth. And I was like, I agree with you. And it just is like, I just keep waiting for another side. But I do also get that, like, especially because Rachel is so – she's so heady and she's trying so hard to, like, embrace her emotions. And I feel like Brian then comes and is, like, so soft and warm and charming and makes her feel really, like, feminine and romantic. And I get how that could be appealing. Yeah, I'm just not sure if you, like, end up with that dude.
And he's giving her that feeling that's, like, we're in a little separate world, which, yeah, if you're feeling isolated and, like, you're juggling a lot of guys – you're going to crave that feeling when you're with a guy where he's like, it's you and me.
Yeah, we're like, we're in our own bubble. And when we're here, it's just this little world.
Yeah.
And then we move on to Peter, who I just, his beauty is overwhelming.
Yeah. I mean, you have to think it's his to lose, right?
I would like to think so, because it's definitely, like, feels like him or Brian. And I feel like I have seen more of a real relationship build with Peter.
I also personally just would prefer to end up with Peter. I mean, when they, this is about my preference.
Yeah, but I also, like, when they had that date where they were just, like, talking about their tooth gaps, I was like, this is a real person conversation.
And they've had real conversations.
It feels, like, easy, but, like, not easy in, like, a TV way. Easy and, like, I'm like, oh, yeah.
And I think that's...
I'm, like, awkwardly intruding on your date.
Right, and I think that's why it's so much fun to watch Peter, he is, like, very attractive, but I think part of what makes him so attractive
is that we actually get
quite a lot from him in these short moments.
I don't think that he necessarily has, like, this incredible personality. It's that we're seeing moments between them that feel like real personality connections.
Yeah.
No, yeah. That's
exactly
it. No,
I would be stuck in a room having a conversation with Kenny before Peter, like, any day. But with Peter, he's super hot. And just seems to, like, be super real in a way that I feel like you very rarely see that combo, especially on, like, The Bachelorette.
Yeah. He definitely seems like someone who doesn't, like, it's that cliche thing of, like, he doesn't know how hot he is.
You think so?
I think he does because he's a model. But he has that vibe.
But it's also, like, did you notice, like, in the first rose ceremony in this episode, he, like, came in wearing a scarf and, like, everybody else was just in suits and he had a scarf on. And then as soon as his name got called, he, like, took the scarf off to, like, let her put the rose on his lapel.
Oh,
and
Peter.
All I could think about for the rest of the ceremony was that he was just, like, standing there, like, holding a scarf awkwardly in his hand.
He has, like, a little bit of an awkwardness that is very appealing.
Yeah, it's charming.
He's super charming. That's the thing. But he also – they have a cute exchange where he's like, you've inspired me to look into the future. She says, so I'm your muse.
Yeah, and then they make out. And then, meanwhile, Kenny is having a conversation with Matt. Remember Matt?
Apparently Rachel does. I don't really.
Yeah.
Penguin suit.
I mean, I know, but that's the only thing. People kept tweeting at me. Like, I kept saying, who are Adam and Matt? And people were like, no, Adam's the guy with the doll and Matt's the one with the penguin suit.
I'm like, no,
I know that. But we're in week six and I don't know anything else about either of them.
So,
and that's a problem.
Kenny is kind of saying to Matt basically that. He's like, it's almost hometowns. He's like, we blanked. Like, time has passed and we don't know Rachel that well and maybe we're not ready. And Matt's sort of like, whatever, like, I can do that. But, like, for you with your daughter, there's more at stake.
And Matt says, like, look, for most of us, it's not going to end up the way we want it to. Like, that's just the reality.
Yeah. I mean, I like Matt. Like, that's the thing. Like, what I've seen of Matt, I'd hang out with you. I don't think you're going to end up with Rachel, but, like, I'd chill with you.
They've just shown us so little.
Adam and Matt seem like good, friendly guys, and I'm sure that they're having conversations with Rachel we don't see.
Of course.
But.
And then, meanwhile, she does sit down with Matt next and asks him.
Talks about Kenny.
She's like, I saw that you were talking with Kenny. His eye earlier was, like, really messed up. Is it okay? And he says Kenny is fine physically, but, like, emotionally he's having a difficult time. Which also made me like Matt. I was like, yeah. Oh, what a good guy. And Kenny is, like, starting to get really emotional about how he's still apart from his daughter, and yet they're almost to hometowns, and he's having a hard time bringing Rachel back to meet her at this point in their relationship because things have kind of been stagnating. He's been, like, dealing with the Lee situation. So when she talks to him, he sort of verbalizes all this to her, and she's sort of like, yeah.
But it was a really nice conversation.
I was really moved, mature, I thought.
Yeah.
I was like moved by like the maturity, and like it seemed so like mutual, like two adults just being like, these are the places that we're in and I think you're amazing, but like these are the values that I have and the things that are important to me. And like she was like, I get that. Like you don't need to be
here. And she says at the end, she's like, I've dated someone with a child before.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because we haven't heard her talk about that. But she's like, she says, you know, speaking as one daddy's girl to the next, like, your daughter's so lucky. And they have this – I thought that the whole goodbye was really kind.
Even to the fact that she, like, made that decision herself in a very clear way. Like, she wasn't like, I want you to stay, but, like, if you feel like you have to go. She was like, based on what we've talked about just now and the fact that you have a daughter at home that you miss, you should go.
He's thankful for that.
Yeah,
like, it seemed like a really, like, mutual, like, I don't know. I just thought I was so weirdly, like, moved by it. And it really made me, like, when they were, like, walking out and just, like, sort of, like,
it made me love both of them.
It made me
so
love both of them. It made me think that, like, I was, like, those two could end up just being, like, friends.
Yeah, I could definitely see
like,
that.
And I also made me, like, I was, like, it ended. And I was, like, can Kenny just be the next Bachelor, please? Like,
I want him to
find a good woman. Like.
Yeah. I have a feeling that it's not going to be
Kenny. I don't think it will be.
No, he didn't make it quite far enough.
But I would watch that season.
Me too. And I also loved then he calls his daughter and says he's coming home. And the way he explains it, he's like, you know, Rachel and I really, really liked each other, but just didn't work out. And his daughter says, like, I'm proud of you and I'm so glad you got to go to amazing places and that you made it this far. And it was just so beautiful.
It really was.
And he says if Mackenzie grows up to be like Rachel, he'll have done his job.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, God. Yeah, I was just full crying, just fully sobbing.
Like. Yeah, I was in a puddle.
I was like, it was like midnight at that point when I was watching it last night. And I just was like sitting there being like, God, there are nice things in the world.
So then she goes back and gives the rose to Peter.
Yay.
And next, we have to get through this.
Oh, gosh.
Will gets a date card that has like two puns in it, though probably not on purpose. Will you be my sweetie? Because Will is his name. And they're going to Sweden.
Sweetie.
And so he's kind of talking with Eric while the group date is going on about how excited he is for this one-on-one. And kind of talking about like what he likes about Rachel and also saying like, you know, to be honest, typically the girls that I've dated in the past haven't looked like her because, you know, I went to like a mostly white high school, mostly white college, and, you know, so I've dated white girls. And Eric is sort of like, oh, you should tell her that. And Will's like, yeah, well, it's not that I like only date white girls. It's just like what's been around me. And Eric's like, mm-hmm. And then they go to Sweden, and it does end up coming up. But first,
it's basically Rachel sets this up as, like, she thinks she's really drawn to Will. She thinks he's handsome and confident, but she feels like he's not, like, super effusive around her. He sort of clams up. And they just – this whole build-up to the nighttime conversation, the way that they play it is just – it's so awkward. They and the date is cool. Like, they're going to Sweden. They get on a boat. It should be something that is fun. And the beginning is a little bit more lighthearted. They kind of like eat pastries and giggle a little bit. They're eating, which is always, I always enjoy seeing.
They set up on a double date with an elderly couple.
Who's been married for 35 years and just randomly wanted to share that information. But Rachel just keeps saying like there's a romance missing here.
Yeah, there's a point where they're standing, like, looking at a vista from a bridge, and she's sort of, like, leaning her face into him like you do when you're, like, ready for a kiss. And he's like, wow, look at this awesome view.
And then they're, like, walking through, and he's like, these bricks are really cool. And she's just like, what? Okay, what are we doing? Why didn't you grab my hand? Like, why aren't we making out right now?
So she's feeling like maybe the physical aspect, the passion isn't there. And then they just go to the coolest place to have dinner, visit Carlsberg Visitors Center. It looks like it's made out of an old brewery or something. They're like big, like copper.
Yeah, Carlsberg is like a beer, right?
I think
it probably is like
an, probably
like,
the
yeah
brewery. Like a former
So this is when she sort of is like, tell me about your past dating and like what kind of girls you're interested in. And that's when he drops the mostly white girls bomb.
It was not the best thing to lead with.
And it was not received well.
And I also like, I don't feel like he explained it to her in the same way that he had like, I don't feel like he prefaced it with like, yeah, I went to this mostly white. Like,
he does say that after the fact.
That's,
I think, what she actually dislikes the most. Cause he's like, well, here's the thing. Like, mostly I grew up around white people and I was mostly around white people in college. So that's just kind of what was available to me. And she's like, well, me too, but I still mostly dated black guys. So, like, that excuse doesn't fly with me, basically. And she seems really thrown.
Yeah, which is understandable. And obviously, like, the three of us sitting here are three white women. This is not an experience that, you know, we can relate to on a personal level. I was scrolling through Twitter and totally understood, like, a really strong reaction among a lot of people watching to this is just like a lot of side-eye gifts, which I appreciated. And there was one tweet that I thought articulated this well. Rachel Dudley at Note Rachel tweeted, like, nobody likes feeling second best. Why did you tell her you like white women? All you had to say was beautiful, smart, etc. And I think that that really like gets to the crux of it. Like, no one wants to feel as though they are something that someone is experimenting with or, like, you know, deigning to, like, a person they're deigning to be around. Like, you want to feel wanted, which is exactly what Rachel says in her In the Moment. She's like, that's incredibly important to me, to feel wanted in any relationship.
Well, also because then he tells her, like, in a relationship, I'm very, like, I've always had a lot of physical passion, but maybe not so much the other aspects of the relationship. And he's like, well, I haven't gotten that from you. And he actually, like, commented on Instagram today. I can tell you that's not how the conversation flowed. And had you been able to see it in its entirety, my statements would have made more sense. I am passionate, but in the past, it's been all of that and not building that mental spiritual connection. So I focus too much on that and not enough on the physical. And he says the wording and how it aired was ... interesting.
Okay. So, I mean, that's not surprising. Also,
it's not.
Like, it felt very teed up from like the previous clips we had seen. And we know that they often present, you know, a conversation in a way that follows like the narrative they want to tell.
Also, like, I want to talk a little bit about, like, back at the house while this is happening, Eric is telling the guys from the group date the conversation he had with Will, and he said, well, I told him to tell her that he hasn't really dated that many black women, that he's dated mostly white women. And Dean says, well, does he need to say that? Which is kind of what a lot of the reaction was on Twitter from a lot of viewers. And Dean's like, well, I haven't dated a black woman before. Do I need to say that? Like, I think if I'm interested in her, that's what matters. And Eric says, well, it's different because Will is black, so she probably assumes that he has mostly dated black women. And Dean says, well, I do think that he's genuinely interested in Rachel because he's there. And that's kind of the entirety of the conversation we see about. So we do know that Will was sort of encouraged, at least by Eric, to tell Rachel about this.
Yeah.
But the way that it happened was clearly very off-putting.
I also actually liked that exchange between Eric and Dean because I thought it was thoughtful. And I thought that Dean at the end was like, oh, I didn't really look at it that way. Like, I get your point. Like, I see that. And I thought that was like, I'm like, these are actually the conversations about race that were going to come up naturally. And you don't need to put someone, like, it's just more evidence that, like, you don't need to throw someone like Lee in there to have these, you know, interesting differences in experience come up. And this exchange was like, was like a good one, I think, to have out there. And I
the conversations are actually more helpful for us as an audience if it's between people who are being thoughtful and open-minded.
Yeah.
And exploring those nuances. Like, this is a situation that, like, we try to be really aware of these issues, but we're not on the inside. We don't know what the dynamics are like for, you know, dating in the Black community. And so Eric and Rachel and Will are kind of sharing that from their different perspectives. And that was actually really interesting and thought-provoking for us. But Rachel's kind of like, sorry, Will, this just didn't happen. I didn't see what I needed from you. And so she sends him home and he's like, I totally get it. This is on me. Very nice.
I'm
like, I don't think he got sent home like because of the white girls thing. I think it was just like, it was already like, she was already like, the coffin was already like being built. And he was like, there's just like one or two more nails.
Yeah. Like, I think if he was showing her a lot of the, and we saw like bits of them in group settings where he would like steal her for a kiss and stuff. If he had built on that, then she would be like, really? Mostly date white girls? Well, I've had a different experience, but like it's about the person, right? Like I could see that conversation of going much differently.
Yeah, totally. I think it was just, I think it was
the
already,
whole package of it. Like something was missing.
She was already not feeling desired by him.
Exactly.
And then I think when you added that on top of it, it was like, okay, now
she's
I'm
like,
really
why are you
not
here?
Feeling desired.
And then she has to have another rose ceremony.
Which was so fast. I couldn't believe like there's like 10 minutes left in the episode. And I was like, are we really having another rose ceremony?
Yes.
I was thrilled because
I'm
it meant
happy.
That
we ended
on a goddamn rose ceremony. Adam is scared. Alex thinks last night took a toll on Rachel. Like, they're all just kind of giving commentary. They're like, we have no idea who's going home.
And she has a hard time. She has to, like, take a break during the ceremony because she's so emotional. And she says, this is the hardest goodbye that I have to say.
She also quotes Hamlet.
To thine own
self be true.
It was that Polonius guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I kept thinking about Clueless.
I just said, she kept on talking about, because earlier she was like, she kept on talking about like the castle and how like that was the inspiration for Hamlet. I was like, do you know how Hamlet ends? I would maybe not focus on that too much.
It is like, kind of cool though. You can,
it's cool.
I think that for a while that castle was listed on Airbnb. You could like bid to spend a night in it. And I was like, yes. But it's eventually Brian, Matt, Dean, and Adam get the new roses that had to be given out. And so it's Alex who is going home. And
he's so delightful. I'm sad.
I know.
Yeah, I'm just going to miss his presence.
I hope he's on Paradise because I really like him.
He seems built for Paradise. Like, because he's so much fun.
Though he does seem to have been on social media recently, so like who knows.
I don't know if he goes to Paradise, but we do get a little goodbye to Alex scene in the credits where he's giving an in the moment during the Viking date and it's like talking shit about Dean's Viking skills. He's like, Dean is like the worst Viking, but if it were going to be a contest to be like the prettiest little princess, it would be Dean. And they're like really good friends. They have like a little
bromance.
Yeah, it
feels very like loving.
And Dean keeps like coming up and like charging him during the conversation and Alex is like, I could deflect this in my
sleep. I said this yesterday, but I highly recommend everyone follows Alex on Instagram because he's hilarious.
He posted this great video of him like doing a Rubik's Cube while playing chess with Dean and still beating Dean.
Along with this like long affectionate caption about how great Dean is. And then Dean like falls off his chair laughing at the end. Oh, like it's very cute.
I love it when there's bro love in the house.
Me too.
So they're very sweet, but goodbye to Alex, and we still have Matt and Adam, so...
Who I can only assume will be sent home next week before hometowns.
I definitely, like, I was watching with my boyfriend last night, and the episode ended, and he turned to me, and he was like, if you had told me week one that shark costume and guy who brought a doll would be in the top six, yeah. I would have called you a
would
liar.
Would not have believed it.
Penguin costume.
What? No, shark costume.
Yeah, with last season. Yeah.
Dolphin, I mean. Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll get to see anything of Matt and Adam.
I think we probably will. We'll get a little moment with them and so that they can properly like cry when they leave. And then I think we know who our top four are.
You think
yeah,
so, right?
It seems that way.
Yes. I would put money on the fact that Eric, Dean, Brian, and Peter are top four.
Yeah.
I'd put money on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, welcome to Feminism Fails, where we rate the most cringeworthy anti-lady moments of the week on our very own patented Feminism Fail scale.
1. You do you, bro. 2. That's questionable. 3. Not cool, people. 4. The 1950s are back. 5. Gender equality is straight up dead.
All right. Now it's time for Feminism Fails. We just had one this week because honestly, the guys are being pretty cool to each other and to Rachel, and we appreciate that. But when Josiah leaves, he kind of talks shit about Rachel's judgment and says there's something wrong with her because she didn't pick him. And yeah, obviously woman's intelligence is based on whether she likes Josiah. Come on. We're going to give that a 3 because he was acting out, he was hurt, but it wasn't a very cool way to express that.
And now we have a bunch of Bachelor news related, of course, to Bachelor in Paradise. We're going to kind of run through it. First, yesterday, TMZ reported 2 different kind of rule changes or adjustments that Bachelor in Paradise production are making, which they had indicated they were going to do in the statement Warner Brothers had released. So first, reportedly, when everyone came back to Mexico, they had to sit through a 2-hour meeting with lawyers and other people who ran through all of these rules and discuss consent, which doesn't seem like a bad thing to me. But apparently, they now have to go to a producer, state that they consent to a sexual encounter before, as a couple, they go to any of the boom boom rooms around the resort, kind of, you know, the places where they traditionally get down. So obviously, production is trying to put a stopgap in there so that there's not even the possibility that a question can be raised that a sexual encounter is not consensual, because they literally have to go to producers and be like, we want to
honestly
bang.
Though, this reminds me of the whole trend a while ago of like famous men being like, we're going to get women to sign contracts before we have sex saying that they consent. Consent can be withdrawn during sex, and that really doesn't account for it. It actually, I think, could be problematic if a sexual encounter goes sideways and one of them doesn't stop pursuing it, then they can waive this contract and say, well, she or he consented, and so they can't say anything now. That makes me a little nervous.
Yeah, hopefully, when they were having this discussion about consent, they made it clear that consent can be withdrawn anytime. I mean, we also have to remember that there still are cameras in all of these rooms. Mm-hmm. So if anything untoward or fucked up were to happen, they would still have that on camera. And we also just hope that everyone down there behaves and, you know, hopefully does not want to engage in any kind of sexual relationship with someone that doesn't want to engage in it with them. So, like, we wish them all the best.
The other rule, apparently, is that the contestants have to hand over all their drugs, including if they have any legal pharmaceuticals on them. They have to hand those over to production, and there is now a 2-drink maximum per hour. And that is a maximum. It's not a minimum. This isn't a comedy club. They can only have 2 drinks per hour or less. So this doesn't seem like a bad idea, to be honest. That's still a lot of drinks.
Right. That's still enough to get tipsy and drunk and have a good time. But yeah, regulating the amount of binge drinking that's done doesn't seem like a bad idea to me.
And now apparently the bartenders and the crew have been tasked with keeping tabs on how much they're drinking, which kind of seems like how it should have been to begin with. So I'm glad to hear that. Meanwhile, DeMario's exclusive interview with E! Has continued to hit the airwaves.
Yeah, so I think the last two parts aired yesterday and kind of went through a transcript of the full interview. And, you know, DeMario says a lot in this. I would recommend going and listening to it because there's kind of a lot to break down. But a few things that I found to be notable was, first of all, like, he made it really clear that he's not blaming Corinne in this. And he also really spoke up for her and spoke really thoughtfully about kind of what he termed, like, the human race's failure in the way that, you know, collectively people reacted to the situation. He says, you know, they were shaming her, shaming me. All you saw was black man, white girl, and you assumed the worst. I was raised by a strong mother. I have sisters. I like a lot of dominant, strong women. And to see Corinne get disrespected and her name dragged through the mud, it sucked. To witness it and be in the middle of a scandal, but it turned into this into a race war. It was black and white, and it wasn't the case. People were saying bad things about her and me before anything was out. He also, you know, reiterates that everything was consensual. He continues to walk the interviewer through that night. He mentions that Chris Harrison was around when they were getting really drunk.
What made me uncomfortable is that they're all clearly, like, in their bathing suits doing shots, and they're really drunk. And apparently Chris was there kind of teasing them for how drunk they were. And that's the kind of atmosphere that does make me uncomfortable, that, like, there are all these sober people involved with the production sort of watching them do naked shots and being like, LOL, DeMario can't even open his eyes. Like, that's not the kind of thing I would consider to be a responsible way of handling this. But DeMario's kind of making the point that they were all drinking a lot. They were all doing shots, and he didn't notice Corinne, like, slurring her speech or acting really out of it, and that she, again, was, like, really the aggressor in the situation. And then he goes through the incident where he was asked to leave the show, which was 2 days later. It was on Tuesday. And
yeah, we touched on this a bit yesterday. Mm-hmm.
And the producer telling him, you know, you're going to have to leave tonight. It'll be worse if you don't. And DeMario says that, you know, the Corinne incident came to his head, but he was like, no, people saw what happened. So they couldn't possibly think there was a problem there. Like, he's been, like, talking about how, as a black man, he's always wanting things to be witnessed because he knows how things can be spun or – like we saw with Kenny, like, you make an accusation about how a black man is behaving. If there's no way to confirm that or deny it, people might tend to believe that the black man did something wrong.
Right. And he touches on this, the racial dynamics of this further. He says, you know, the minute you release this black man's face and this white girl's face before either of us commented on it, I was already a rapist. And I was like, excuse my French, the N-word, a monkey, and she's a whore and a slut. They were slut-shaming her because of what she did last season with Nick. People were just angry. Like, it was like black people didn't like her and white people didn't like me, and people were mad because instead of waiting for the facts to come out, they just commented on it.
Yeah.
And I think, like, the way he's describing this is really thoughtful and speaks to kind of what we were trying to get at with our bonus episode and, like, the really kind of thorny and upsetting dynamics that were reflected back in the reaction to all of this.
Yeah, he's really clearly trying to juggle a lot of complicated things. And he says, you know, if he could talk to Corinne right now, he'd say, you know, he's here for her. He feels bad for what she's going through. He loves her to death. But also, he, you know, is also questioning the way that she's handling it insofar as It does affect him if she says, you know, I don't remember what happened that night. It does get into a gray area of consent, and that reflects on him. And he's like, I'm here for her. I support her. What she's going through is really hard, but, you know, I think she should maybe be more thoughtful about how what she says might reflect on
me. And yeah, and again, like, we haven't heard much from Corinne. We've only heard from her lawyer since this happened. So I can see why he wishes that they could just have, you know, an honest conversation without all of this, like, media circus around it. He also is asked if he would go back to Bachelor in Paradise, which we had seen reported that he was invited back and that he had declined. But in this interview, he seems kind of torn about it. And he says, you know, it's not, he's not thinking about it right now, but like maybe he would go back. It's interesting because he also, you know, he's asked, like, if you were to go back, like, how could you trust them? And I assume meaning production, the crew. And he says, like, that he doesn't believe it was them because a lot of people's lives and livelihoods were on the line. Obviously, there's a lot of people who weren't involved directly in this who, you know, are paid by the show.
He's being very careful not to assign blame to anyone.
To anyone specifically. And he ends by kind of saying, like, I want the tape of the incident release, which ABC and Warner Brothers have said they won't do. But he's like, I feel like that would allow people to see exactly what happened.
Yeah. And apparently he also became very close to Alexis.
Yeah, that was a weird little thing that was thrown in there that Claire and I thought was funny. Like, they just sort of throw in, like, you were very close to Alexis on set. Would you go back for her? And he says, if I was to go back, it would be strictly for her.
Yeah, we didn't know about that. But
I guess they're...
I could see it. I could see it.
I don't know if that meant romantically or just BFFs, but
yeah,
I guess. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how Bachelor in Paradise chooses to address all of this when it actually airs, because reportedly they are going to use the footage leading up to this whole thing happening. I mean, I doubt the footage that's in question, but I don't think – it sounds like they're not going to pretend that they started fresh. So they'll have to address it somehow, and I guess, you know, we'll see.
I guess we'll see. So that's it for Here to Make Friends.
Thanks to our guest, Aaron Dark, and, of course, our producer, Nick Offenberg.
And if you haven't yet, please remember to find Here to Make Friends on Apple Podcasts to subscribe and give us a rating. It helps other people find our show. We're also on Facebook. And you can find each of us on Twitter. I'm at Claire E. Fallon. And
Claire is very close to 10,000 Twitter followers. So if you could just all, like, give her a little bit of love.
Make me important.
I believe, you know, in our listeners, we can get her there together. And I'm at Emily D. Rose on Twitter and Instagram. And you can also always send us an email at heretomakefriends@huffingtonpost.com.
Thanks for listening. Enjoy your 4th of July week, and we will be back after that to recap yet another week of The Bachelorette.